supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott. Last year, Alex Galen was taking a class on documentary filmmaking in college. He decided to document his search for his birth mother. He didn't know much about her, but managed to get a few leads and phone numbers.
My name's Alex Galen, I'm adopted, and I think you may be my birth mother.
He turned his story into a documentary called Lucky Boy, which got thousands of hits on YouTube and won several prizes. On today's show, we'll hear excerpts from a recent panel discussion on the topic of adoption. It was part of our In the Spirit of Family discussion series presented by WHYY's Children's Service. Alex told us about his quest to find his birth mother and how it affected his life. We also discussed adoption in general, what options are available, and what helps adoptive families build strong relationships. Our guests were Maxine Chalker and Gloria Hockman. Chalker is a social worker and founder and executive director of Adoptions from the Heart. Gloria Hockman is director of communications for the National Adoption Center. Dan Gottlieb started the discussion with a question for Alex.
When did you learn you were adopted?
I've known my whole life that I've been adopted. I never really understood that until my mom said that when I was in her arms as a baby. Even then, she always would say there was a mother and she was too young to take care of her son, and that's why we have you. So my whole life I've known, and I really appreciate that, you know, it was never a secret.
What's it like to be adopted?
Personally, I've always felt very special being adopted because I know that my parents really wanted a child, and I know that they got me, and I know that because they've wanted a child so much, I was really special to them and they're really special to me.
So that worked out pretty well.
Worked out great.
Your parents are here.
Yep.
Where's mom?
Mom's in the pink. Dad's in the tie.
Could you just tell us why you decided to tell Alex the way you did?
I just feel that both of us are of the belief that honesty is the best policy. And I was very proud of the fact that we were able to adopt a child. We had two daughters from my husband's first marriage, and who I just adored, and I wanted a child badly, as did Steve. And I was so proud of the fact that we were able to do this that I always wanted him to know the truth, because it's a wonderful thing. Anyone, to me, can give birth to a child, but not anyone can adopt a child.
Did you wonder about your biological mother?
I've always wondered about my biological mother. Just that kind of unknown. Is there this woman out there that I came out of that's, you know, thinking of me? Does she care? What's she like? Does she look like me? Does she want to meet me at all? It was just that unknown.
It was just curiosity. Were there any, I gotta be a psychologist, I apologize. Were there any emotions attached to it? Was there hurt or anger or?
She was, I think, 15 when she gave birth to me. So, and I always knew that. So there was really, you know, I understood why I had to be adopted. She couldn't really take great care of me, she felt, so she put me up for adoption. So I always felt, you know, appreciative that she did that, because I really have such a loving family. The fact that, you know, I didn't know what she was like at all, so who knows what my life could have been. All I know is that my life is really great now. Mm. So I'm glad she gave me that opportunity.
Maxine Chalker, let me turn to you. Tell us a bit about your background and how you got into this field.
Well, actually, I'm an adoptee myself. So I was adopted at birth, and I did a search for my birth family, actually, before I started the agency 23 years ago. So, you know, I understand just what Alex is saying. I had a successful reunion. I had loving adoptive parents. And I became a social worker, have a bachelor and master's degree in social work, and I started the agency based on open adoption.
Why? Why specifically open adoption?
Because I really felt that it was important for adoptees to know about their birth, where they came from, who they came from. And I really felt that birth mothers would want to know who was going to raise their child. So I really, you know, that was a long time ago. That was 23 years ago, and not many agencies were doing that.
Well, that was my next question, is what was the world like back then, the world of adoption back then, 20 years ago?
Well, it was pretty closed, but now it's very open. And we have had so many different kinds of scenarios where, you know, where people have gotten married and had their birth family at the wedding. And birth parents have gotten married and had their children in the wedding. They've gone on vacation together, or they have limited access. They might see each other once every 5 years. It's really up to the individual people.
It's pretty universal that adoptees want to know their biological mother, I assume. Is the reverse also universal?
I think that birth parents at least want to know what happened to their child. Are they okay? Did they make a terrible mistake? Were they raised in an awful family? Were they abused? They worry about that. Just like I think adoptees always wonder, like, why did my mother place me for adoption? What was her reason? Did she not love me? Was it because she was too young? She didn't have any money? What's the real reason? And they want to know not what their adoptive parents tell them, but what the true reason is.
Tell us about the mechanics of open adoption versus closed. How does it work?
We evaluate prospective adoptive parents and educate them about how to raise an adopted child. And we work with pregnant women who want to consider placing their children for adoption. And the pregnant women select the family from waiting families based on their criteria, whether it's a certain religion they want, whether it's a family without children. They can meet several times. They can be at the hospital. They can go through labor with them. It really depends. We really let the hands of the people involved instead of adoptive parents. I remember, because I worked at a public agency, where we used to sit around a table and say, I think this baby should go with the Joneses. Now it's the birth mothers that choose.
Gloria Hackman, you deal with children in the foster care system. What's their relationship with their biological families? Do they even know who they are?
Well, sometimes they know who they are because many of these children are older and they have lived with their biological parents or their biological relatives for some time. Sometimes they don't remember them because they were placed in foster care when they were very young. And some of these children have lived in foster care for a number of years. I've seen children live in foster care in maybe 11 different foster homes in 10 years. And that's very sad. And sometimes they still see their birth parents for visits while they're in foster care. But once they're adopted, it depends, again, on the relationship between the adoptive parents and the birth parents and the child.
Well, here I wonder about the anxiety the adoptive parent might have.
Right, being afraid that the birth parents are going to come back and take the child. And that when we see stories in the paper about this happening, it's usually concerning infants that have been placed for adoption, and the birth parents either didn't get counseling that would help them through this, or they weren't sure about it, or something happened later that made them change their minds, and they'll come back. And then there's a big sensational story in the paper. But when they have adopted through an agency, they had to be less afraid of it. But that was before the era of open adoption. Now that we have open adoption, it's a whole different story. You know, it used to be that adoptive parents were urged not to even tell the children that they were adopted. That's certainly very passé.
What was the thinking there?
That it would be difficult for the child. The child would grow up not knowing who he really belonged to. That the adoptive parents couldn't make a firm commitment to a child, thinking that maybe the birth parents would come back. That the child might, if he knew he were adopted, one day want to go back and search for birth parents, mm-hmm. which often happens, right. Sometimes doesn't. Not every child who's adopted that doesn't know his birth parents wants to go back and search for them. And some do, some don't.
So when I talked about parental anxiety, I was thinking of that. And I was also thinking of another dimension of parental anxiety. And Alex, I want to turn to you and ask this. The anxiety that goes with what if the biological, what if he likes her better than me? What if they just miss each other and there's a connection there? So I'm guessing that you discussed this with your parents about exploring your biological.
Yeah, actually, I knew that I always wanted to look for my biological mom, so I brought out my dad and my mom to University of Wisconsin, where I was in school, and I did this documentary for a documentary class, and then I talked to them, and they brought a lot of information, and they seemed really calm and cool and, you know, understood that I wanted to know at the very least so I could get some medical information.
Right. Let me try a what-if question on you.
Sure.
What if they weren't comfortable?
I still would have done it. I was really, you know, actually growing up, I wasn't really sure that they were so comfortable. I would bring it up sometimes, and it was always kind of, well, when you're older, because you have to be 18, I think, to legally search. So I really wasn't so sure. I was so happy that they were comfortable, but even if they weren't, I would have done it, and I would have, you know, like they said, been completely honest about it. I wouldn't have really hid the fact. Maybe I would have hid the fact that I was searching, but once I found some information, I would have been open with them.
We're listening to excerpts from a recent panel discussion on adoption today. We just heard from Alex Galen, who set out to find his birth mother and documented the process in a short film called Lucky Boy. We'll hear more of his story after our break. Dr. Dan Gottlieb was also joined by Maxine Chalker and Gloria Hochman. Chalker is a social worker and founder and director of Adoptions from the Heart. Gloria Hochman is director of communications for the National Adoption Center. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
I'm Terry Gross. Join me for interviews on the arts, entertainment, and the issues of the day on Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. We're listening to excerpts from a recent panel discussion on adoption today. It was part of our In the Spirit of Family discussion series presented by WHYY's Children's Service. Dan Gottlieb's guests were Maxine Chalker and Gloria Hochman. Chalker is a social worker and founder and director of Adoptions from the Heart. Gloria Hochman is director of communications for the National Adoption Center. Before our break, we heard from Alex Galen, who set out to find his birth mother. Here's more of his story.
When you got started, what was it like? I mean, you were going into a neighborhood you've never been in before. What?
Totally scared, and I really expected the worst.
Tell me.
And that's kind of the way I go about trying to do anything, is to expect the worst. And if
What was the worst in your head?
The worst, I guess, in my head was I would either meet this woman, she wouldn't want to have anything to do with me, but I'd be able to get some sort of information and then leave it at that. Or maybe, actually in the documentary, I talked to another adoptee, and he found his birth mother, and they had a little bit of a relationship, and then it kind of got cut off. So a kind of awkwardness, maybe, you know, that they feel like they're my real parent, and they want to, be a parent, rather than, you know, just be my birth parent who gave birth to me and be a friend. They would want to have some more control over me that, you know, is not needed. I'm 22 years old, and I have my parents.
Did you feel alone in this process?
I didn't feel alone really at all. I mean, it was great that I had both my parents. And when, you know, not everyone talks about adoption, but when you bring it up, everyone seems to know someone that's adopted or they're adopted themselves.
How did you start?
I
assume Google has to be in the process
somewhere.
Google's
a big one. I started making sure that my parents were okay with this. And I had that birth tag, and my mom never even thought that was her real name, but I just gave it a shot. I typed it in Google. I paid $10 in a people search, and these five numbers came up. And then it took me a couple months to kind of get the courage to actually make these calls.
You sat with those numbers.
I had them for a little while, yeah.
Alex, we're going to hear more later about what happened in your search for your birth mother. But I want to turn back now to Gloria Hockman. Back to the foster care issue. A lot of the children in foster care, you mentioned, are older, have been in multiple foster
yes.
homes. The traditional thinking is these children just don't get adopted. But when I read over some of your notes and discussions, actually that's not true.
It isn't true. The children are not only older, but many of them have some kind of a disability. Usually it's emotional, because if they've bounced around a foster care system for a long time, then they're bound to have some emotional problems. Many of them are brothers and sisters that want to stay together. And very frequently it has happened in adoption that they would separate them. So you might have four siblings living in four different foster homes, but they really would like to be together. And there's good evidence that it's very harmful to separate siblings, because sometimes they're the only things they know, the only things they can hold onto are each other. And in around the country, about 45% of the children come from minority cultures. In cities like Philadelphia, about 85 to 90% come from minority cultures. And many of the children are teenagers. And that's difficult. People will say, well, I'm not sure I want to adopt a teenager. 14, 15, they're soon going to leave my house.
But some do.
Many do. And we were stunned.
Tell us.
When we opened our doors in 1972, we had no idea if anyone would want to adopt a child, say, with Down syndrome, or a child who was blind, or a child who came with three brothers and sisters. But we found that they just didn't know these kids were available.
Tell us about the people.
They were often people of deep faith that believed they were good parents. Many of them had children of their own and decided that they wanted to extend their parenting capabilities to other children. That gave them a great deal of satisfaction. There were many people that felt that they wanted to adopt a child who might not be adopted otherwise, that these were children that wouldn't be readily adoptable, like the little babies. Nobody was waiting in line for them, and they wanted to do it. There were, in the beginning, it was mainly couples, but not too long into that, we found single people that wanted to adopt, mainly single women, and more recently, single men. And adoption agencies are never movers of society. They are mirrors of society.
Yeah.
And when society accepts something, then they accept it. So now that we see that single men can have custody of children and they can take care of children, then agencies will say, well, yeah, we could consider a single man, and they do.
What are the issues that come up for both parent, families, and child when they adopt an older child who's...
Parents are frequently concerned that the child's personality patterns are crystallized, that they won't be able to have any impact on the way this child grows up. They're afraid the child might not accept them. They're not sure if they can handle behaviors that the child might present to them. The children, on the other hand, frequently have been burnt a lot. They come from backgrounds often of abuse and of neglect. If they lived in more than one foster home, as most of them have, they have different rules in different homes. They wonder if they can trust these people. Will they keep them? Will they be in the same place next Thanksgiving or next New Year's?
Let me stop you there.
Sure.
Because I say in my psychotherapy office that nothing can grow without trust.
Right.
That's got to be the first ingredient.
Absolutely.
To sustain life. How do these kids, after what they've been through, begin to develop trust? What's the task for these parents?
I sometimes wonder myself when I see what they've been through, how they can ever trust. But they put parents to the test often. You know, some kids are so resilient, as I'm sure you found, that no matter what they've been through, they're almost like these invulnerable children, that they can go into a family, and if they're given love and caring, they can integrate well. They so much want a family. I've seen 14 and 15-year-olds say, I just want a family. I want somebody who will be nice to me, somebody who won't hit me. So they have to learn how to trust. The ones that can't do it very quickly will test their parents out and say, well, if I do this, will they still keep me? And then the parents will have to deal with that. So the parents have a lot to do. They have a lot of work with these children.
Hmm.
Also a lot of satisfaction and a lot of gratification.
Let's broaden out the discussion a bit. And I want to turn back to you, Maxine. When people come to you, have they already decided to adopt?
Yes, they have. Prospective adoptive parents?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already decided, but they sometimes don't know what they want to adopt. Do they want to adopt an older child? Do they want to adopt an infant? Do they want to adopt one from a foreign country? What race child do they want to adopt?
How do you help them decide?
Well, I think the most important thing that agencies do is to help educate families, is to help tell them what it's like to have an adopted child. How adopted children feel growing up, and I think trust is an interesting issue because I think a lot of adopted children, even children adopted at birth, have a little bit of a trust issue and may try their parents like, are you sure you want to keep me, because somebody didn't. But I think that educating parents, and I don't think it should just end with, we give them an education course and then they eventually get a child, but I think it has to be an ongoing thing throughout their life. Hopefully they will avail themselves of conferences, and I know Adoptions from the Heart offers ongoing kind of courses in different subjects so that they, first of all, that they keep reminding themselves that they have an adopted child, and that there's different topics and concerns that you have as your child grows up. Of course, the beginning topic is, how do you tell your child they're adopted? What do you tell them? How do you tell them? What age do you tell them? But then as they grow up, they have other issues. Especially with international adoption or transracial adoption, they have all these questions, you know, people ask them questions.
So let's go back a little bit to the beginning, and I'll turn to you, Gloria. How do you help parents decide whether or not they want to adopt, and then how do you decide whether they're, I don't know what the word is, qualified, competent, capable?
Well, we try to help them on the front end. We don't actually place children at the National
Right.
Adoption Center, but we send them to agencies that will be able to find families for them. But we do try to talk to prospective adopters about what it's like to adopt. These children are going to go through developmental stages, not only the same developmental stages that all children go through, but additional layers of developmental stages by virtue of being adopted.
So what's it like to adopt?
So what is it like? You have to be prepared to be patient. You have to be prepared to work hard to gain the trust of the child. You have to be sure that you can handle this child. And not everybody can handle every child, which is why you have to have a pool of prospective adopters. I might be able to handle a child who has serious emotional issues, but I might not be able to handle a family of four siblings. Everyone has to figure out what they're best suited for, because the worst thing you want to do is to place a child and the adoption fails. And fortunately, that...
What happens then?
The child will go back to the agency, and the agency will try to find another family for them. So you can imagine how devastating that is to a child, and to the parents as
right,
well,
right.
If it doesn't work out. So we don't want that to happen. So we try to build in all the supports on the front end. And as Maxine said, people also need supports on the back end. It doesn't begin and end with the placement of a child in your home. You need to be able to go for therapy if you need therapy. You need to be able to get help with education of a child.
Maxine, you mentioned earlier international adoption, and I'd like to talk about that for a minute. First of all, how do parents decide?
Well, I think international adoption became really popular, I think, about 8 years ago. And a lot of people, unfortunately, turned to international adoption because they didn't want anything to do with birth parents. And they felt that they would go there, they would get an orphan that needed a home, they wouldn't have to worry about who the parents were because the children were abandoned. So they went to different countries. Now, unfortunately, international adoption is really on the downswing, mightily on the downswing.
Why?
Well, I think because of the Hague Convention, the State Department has found a couple, gone into different countries and found that there were some abuses, that there's been birth mothers that were promised money for their children, there's been some baby buying, and they've stopped the adoptions in these countries. The unfortunate part is, okay, that's wrong, and maybe those countries, because it's their children, should look into this. But then they stop adoptions for Americans, and all those children remain in orphanages. And that's really a crime, I think.
In general, are there more or fewer children available for adoption? Do you know?
Well, I would more. There are more, but I think it's becoming less. I'd say in the last year, it is definitely adoptions have dropped.
Why?
Because of the foreign adoption. Because different countries have shut down.
We've talked about international. I want to talk a bit about interracial adoption, and this is a pretty complicated issue here. What are the issues? What are the politics today as opposed to a decade ago or two decades ago? Gloria?
Well, I think transracial adoption has been one of the hottest issues in adoption for years and years. It surfaces every so often. Started back in the early 1970s when we were just coming off a civil rights movement, and people felt that it was appropriate to integrate their families through adoption and the adoption of children of another race. And almost as soon as they began doing that, here came the National Association of Black Social Workers saying, we don't want you adopting our children. This is genocide. We've raised our children very well, thank you. And African-American families have raised their children always in their own communities. The grandmom raised the grandchildren, an aunt raises nieces and nephews, but they haven't been part of a formal system. And so it was understandable that this would be very scary to them. And this allowed agencies to re-examine their policies.
So you're talking now about 40 years.
This is about 40 years ago. Okay. Now, in that time, transracial adoption ebbed, so that people were saying, well, maybe it isn't so right to adopt across racial lines.
And what changed and when?
It changed with the protest of not only the National Association of Black Social Workers, but others. And then the federal government stepped in. In the late 90s, and they said, you're allowing these African-American children to languish in foster care, and we're not going to let that happen. That's discriminating against these children. So what we're going to say is that race cannot be used as a factor in adoption, that if you are qualified to adopt a child, that race should not matter. And that, as a matter of fact, if you were an agency receiving federal money, a portion of your federal funding would be taken away if it were found that you were discriminating because of race.
So that's the politics.
That's the politics of it.
Let's talk about the psychology of it.
Psychology of it is that now these kids are older. This was 40 years ago. Some of them are 35 years old now, or maybe a little older. And if you go and you ask them, some of them will say, this is my family. This is just who I am. It's fine. And in fact, some people have adopted children from several races and several cultures, and they'll help the children observe the rituals of their own culture. And I think that parents that adopt across cultural and racial lines are some of the most diligent about exposing their children to their own cultures. It would certainly be very wrong, I think, for, say, a Caucasian person to adopt an African-American child, raise them in an all-white neighborhood, have no exposure to children of their own race, send them to an all-white school. That would be harmful to a child, because you couldn't give a child a true sense of his identity, and every child deserves that. Now the issue is being raised again, because now the federal government is looking at groups that are saying, we want to be sure that if children are placed transracially, that you're also recruiting in the African-American community as well, so you give them a chance to adopt their own children. And also that if families of another race or culture are going to adopt them, it should be mandated that they have training, that they understand more about the child's heritage and culture.
And is that the case with international adoptions too? Because it seems to me that structurally and psychologically they're very similar. Maxine, do you want to?
Well, I want to mention, I don't want to ignore birth mothers. And I know we allow birth mothers to select the family for their child. And quite a few of our African-American birth mothers want African-American families. They don't care whether it's a single woman or single man, and quite a few of them want African-American families. And we are always looking for African-American families because they would get a child right away. There's really a need for African-American families to adopt these children.
The families I've worked with who have adopted a child always struggle with the issue of nature versus nurture. You know, is it something that if a child has X, whatever X is it something I've done? Is it something they brought in? How would you suggest things? Because that happens. I mean, it just happens. So, Maxine, how do you suggest they deal with it?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, since I'm an adoptee, growing up, I always noticed how I was different from my adoptive parents. I knew that I was from a different culture, and I was raised in a different religion. And so I always thought, well, I'm really different. I'm not really like them. And then when I did a search and found my birth family, I realized how much I was like my adoptive parents, that I was exactly like them. But I didn't realize that growing up. So I think there's a lot for children to learn about. But as time goes on, they do.
Sure. There's an issue you brought up when we spoke to you earlier, and that's embryo adoption.
Right.
What is that?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think a lot of the agencies are wanting to call it embryo placement rather than adoption because it's not truly an adoption. There are a lot of frozen embryos in clinics all across the country, and these embryos are just sitting there. And a lot of them have been abandoned. A lot of them, families are paying for storage of these embryos. And families that have these embryos, which can conceivably be, if born, biological sisters and brothers of the children they already have. So many of them are deciding to place these embryos with another family. And it's almost like open adoption. They could choose the other family if they want. The prospective family, the advantage to the new family is that they can control the environment of the pregnancy. They can have good prenatal care. They can have good nutrition. They can give birth. They don't have to go through any legal process of adoption. But the tricky thing, of course, hopefully they will use an agency to educate them once again, because there's a lot to educate them about with this. How do you tell a child this? You were born to me, but you're not my biological. I mean, you are my biological child, but you're not my genetic child. I mean, there's a whole lot of issues.
I'm listening to you now and having trouble getting it.
So it is a complicated issue, but I really think in the next century, this is going to be very common.
Wow.
And
wow.
We have to really have some policies and procedures in place to protect those children.
We're listening to excerpts from a recent panel discussion on adoption today. Dr. Dan Gottlieb was joined by Maxine Chalker and Gloria Hockman. Chalker is a social worker and founder and executive director of Adoptions from the Heart. Gloria Hockman is director of communications for the National Adoption Center. We also heard from Alex Galen, who searched for his birth mother and turned the story into a documentary called Lucky Boy. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Every 4 years, Democrats and Republicans gather to nominate their candidates for president.
Accept the nomination of the Democrats.
I have the highest honor of accepting your nomination.
I proudly accept your nomination.
This year, John McCain and Barack Obama will accept their party's nominations. Join us starting August 25th for special coverage of the 2008 conventions from NPR News.
On 91 FM, TV 12, and WHYY.org.
Next time on Day to Day.
Criminals get help when they're paroled.
The state will help you find housing, clothing, job training.
Walter Swift spent 26 years in jail for a crime he didn't commit. He was exonerated and freed 3 months ago.
So, how's he doing?
I literally went through pure hell just to get an ID card.
Making things right when a conviction is wrong.
People just forget about you.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. We're listening to excerpts from a recent panel discussion on adoption today. Dan Gottlieb's guests were Maxine Chalker and Gloria Hochman. Chalker is a social worker and founder and executive director of Adoptions from the Heart. Gloria Hochman is director of communications for the National Adoption Center. Before our break, we heard from Alex Galen, who set out to find his birth mother. Here is more of his story.
When we last left off, you had five numbers. You called one. What happened?
Modem. It was a fax machine.
It was a fax machine. Okay. So.
Called another.
We know your biological mother was not a fax
probably
machine.
Probably not a fax
machine. So you moved on.
Moved on. Next one just rang.
What's this like for you?
I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in the radio station so I could record it for the documentary. And
record your freaking out.
Record me freaking out, and you see I'm freaking out.
Good.
And I was sweating. It was terribly hot in there. The next number happens, doesn't go through. Another number happens, another beep, beep, beep.
So we're up to 3 out of 5.
Yeah. None of them worked, actually. And I just decided, you know, that second one that just kept on ringing, I'll call it back. And I called it back, and a woman picked up, and you know, I was kind of rehearsing what I was going to say, and I was freaking out, completely nervous. I was almost happy that no one was picking up, because it was like, you know, great, I can go home and go to sleep and not have to worry about this. And I call back this number, the woman picks up. Hello, who's this? I say, I know this is a heavy subject. Trying, kind of sputtering my words. Basically, my name's Alex Galen. I'm adopted, and I think you may be my birth mother. And then there was a pause, and that was just the longest pause ever because I had no idea. Did she hang up? Like, was this the wrong number? That'd be a crazy call to get.
Meanwhile, I doubt that you're breathing while this is going on, right?
Just holding on.
Right, right.
And then the next thing she says, I think, was, well, how'd you get my number? And it's like, oh, geez, this is, you know, what I was dreading. This is a woman that really just didn't want anything to do with me. So I told her Google, and she thought it was a prank call, so she asked me my birthday, and she asked me where I was born just to make sure that it wasn't a prank call. And I, you know, I gave her the right answers, and then all of a sudden she breaks into, well, your grandmother was looking for you too. I was like, oh, well, that's an interesting thing to say. Okay, let's go with this. And
what was that like when you realized you were talking to your biological mother?
It was immediate relaxation that, wow, this is it. And then it was also like immediate panic, like, wow, this is it. So, you know, we kept on talking, and she's been waiting, I guess, 22 years or so to say, I'm married to your dad. So
the man who was your biological father when she was 15 years old, she eventually married him,
mm-hmm.
and had other children.
Yeah, that was the first wow, like, you know, because I never thought of even looking for a birth dad so
Why?
Young. So young, you think, you know, things happen. And it happened. She got pregnant, and the guy's like, peace, I'm out of here. Don't want anything to do with that.
Right.
But that wasn't the case at all. But it, you know, I always expected the worst. I never expected them to ever be together. Never crossed my mind.
So I watched the movie, and I mm-hmm. know that you spoke to your father, too,
yeah.
on the phone that day.
That day. He was washing dishes right next to her and was like, well, this is a weird conversation. What's going on this?
And how did he react?
Wow, this is weird. That's what he said. And it was weird for me, too. And she, they were trying to have a kid, I think, you know, for the past however many years, maybe 8 years or so, and were unsuccessful. But when I called, she said that she was due in 2 weeks to have a child. So I kind of shook her up a little bit with that telephone call, and 2 days later, she had a little baby boy. Named Kai. It's my little brother.
Your little brother.
Yeah.
And you met her. You went out there. She came.
Yeah, first.
First, tell me how your parents reacted to this connection.
Well, you know, I made sure that they were comfy with everything before the search. And then this all happened. Wow, they're still together, and there's a little boy. I called my mom. She was driving. I told her to pull over, and I told her the whole situation. And I was more afraid then just because it was so unexpected. It's like, wow, I thought maybe I'd find this woman, and that's what we were expecting. But this other family I found. So I was worried about them. But once they came and they visited us, and we met Kai, and we met Trina, and we met Tommy, my birth parents, and we saw how cool they were, and we saw that they were actually really sweet, kind, caring people with an understanding of, like, they're my parents, and these others are my birth parents.
How do you feel about them?
Oh, they're wonderful people.
I'm not asking your assessment. I'm asking your feelings. How do you feel about those two?
I think... All right, how about they're magical people? I think it's amazing that what they did as teenagers, you know, giving me up was, you know, took so much courage. And I can't imagine myself going through that. So
you feel tenderness, you feel gratitude.
Yeah, I do. I feel a lot of love. For sure.
I was wondering about that. Mm-hmm. You do feel love.
I do.
When did that start? When did you start to love them?
Well, it definitely probably started before we ever said anything, just because I always had this, you know, the whole reason that I was calling in the first place was just to say, thanks. I'm glad that you did this. Wow. I have a great life. You know, you don't have to worry, and I understand what happened. I understand you were young. So... there was always an appreciation, and you know that turned to love once I met them, and they were just awesome people, and like I couldn't see it any other way at this point.
Maxine, this to use Alex's word, the story is amazing, but not all these stories are amazing. You met your biological mother. What happened there?
Well, when I first met her, it was like a honeymoon thing. You know, it was like nice to know who it was that gave birth to me. She seemed happy to see me. At first, she kind of said it wasn't her, but then she called me and said, well, your search is over. You know, I am your birth mother. And that lasted for about a year. And I met her children. She had two other children. But after a while, after a year or two, I found that really I had nothing in common with her and that she really hadn't been such a great mother to her children. And I'm still very, you know, in touch with my birth sister and brother, but I realized how very lucky I was because I have had wonderful adoptive parents and how lucky I was that I had them and that, you know, I was so glad that I was placed for adoption. It was a similar situation. She was very young. She was actually an immigrant, so she really could not keep a child, you know, being unwed. And
so it sounds like despite your disappointment, you don't have regrets about what you've done.
Oh, I don't have regrets at all. And before I started the agency, I worked for a public agency, and I did a lot of search and reunions. And I found all kinds of things, all kinds of things. I even remember a young man who found his birth mother was in a mental institute, and she'd been in a mental institute for like 30 years, so you know she was really bad. And he said he was still glad that he had looked for her and found her and resolved this. And we've also, at Adoptions from the Heart, we've even had things where, unfortunately, we've had sad stories. Birth parents that died, children that have died. And at least to call the birth parents and tell them what happened. Or to, you know, the opposite. I mean, I really think people need to know what's happening so they don't wonder their whole life. I wonder what happened to this child. I wonder what happened to my parents. Are they still alive? Do they care about me? So I think there's a lot to be said for communication.
Maxine, tell us about your annual picnics.
Oh, we have annual picnic with at least about 1,000 people that come, and they bring their children, and we tell them that they can invite their birth parents. And I think that A lot of them do. Of course, ones that have internationally adopted children don't. But the ones that have domestic adoptions bring their birth parents. And I think it's kind of a comfortable setting because, first of all, the children get to see all these other children that are adopted because they don't feel like, I'm the only adopted child. Look at all these children. They're all adopted. And they get to see their birth mother and their birth parents or birth parents. We've even had birth fathers come. And they feel comfortable there because there's other birth parents there. And people, you know, it's a very accepting environment. So it's kind of a safe place to begin. They've met each other before, but it's different. That's before when they were pregnant. Now it's like later and the children are one or two or three or four.
So let's open up for questions.
I wonder if you can discuss the emotional issues that adoptive children might have when they are adults that are different from birth children.
What were you wondering about anything specific about adoptive children when they grow up?
Yes. I have two adopted children who are now in their 20s, and I would say one of them they both have issues. One of them had addiction issues and it's just now seeming to come into recovery. And the other daughter, I feel, is very distant. The last time I saw her was Mother's Day, and she hasn't called since, and I'm sort of just putting it off myself.
So there's a couple of questions. One is the one you verbalized. What are the issues? And one thing I'm hearing with your daughter is issues of attachment that may come up when they're grown as opposed to when they're younger. And the other question that it raises, certainly in my mind, is all children are somewhat at risk for all of the things that are out there, drug addiction, so on and so forth. And are adoptive children at more risk? Who wants to take it, Gloria?
There are some studies that show that adoptive children show up disproportionately in the office of psychiatrists and psychologists. I think it depends on the child and it depends on the adoption. Some adoptive children sail through life doing really well and don't seem to have the issues that you describe, and others do. It's always difficult to know if it's, say, a teenager who's 18 or 17, are they doing drugs because that's what kids do sometimes when they're that age, and they've gotten in with this group of friends that does it, and it's way cool to do this? Or is it because they're adopted? Does that have anything to do with it? Or maybe it's an adoption across racial lines. Does that have something to do with it? So it's hard to tease out what the causes are. And I think it's at that point that many families do go for family therapy to try to figure out what's behind all of this. You can't automatically assume it's because of the adoption. The adoption may play a part in it.
And
we don't know.
And like most of us in life, we might never find out really what's behind it. And the question is, what do we do to resolve it? What can we do to diminish the pain of everyone involved?
One thing I can say that's pretty universal is that whether children want to search for their birth parents or not, that the issues come up for them when the continuity of life is in question, when there's a birth, a death, a marriage, a graduation, where time is an element. This is when people begin to think about, if they haven't thought about it consciously before, they'll think about where did I come from and who am I, and that's when they'll begin to search frequently. And girls more than boys. Girls seem to be more into the search than boys are.
I think another issue you could consider too, first of all, they're grown, so I don't know that you can't really tell them what to do. But something that might help them is to join some kind of self-help group. In Philadelphia, there's Adoption Forum, where they could find other like adoptees that are having certain feelings, different feelings, maybe similar, maybe not similar. And to talk over with peers if they don't want to consider counseling.
We have another question from the audience.
I have always thought that I wanted to be an adoptive parent. And I've actually done a fair amount of research and looking into it. And despite having done all that, I've never done it. And now I find myself, I'm a single woman in my mid-50s, and I'm still like this. So I guess, I mean, the concrete part of my question is what opportunities are available to somebody like me? But the other part is, what can I do to just get myself off this place of just not being able to go forward and not being able to say, nah, not going to do it?
Maybe you should consider
Great
foster
question.
Care.
Great question, Maxine.
Maybe you should consider foster care. Maybe you should consider seeing what it's like to have a child in your home and see how it feels. See if you like it or you don't like it, rather than adopt, because then you have the child. And it's not a question. You really have to make a commitment.
That was a shockingly simple answer to a complicated question.
I would
As
also
a therapist,
talk.
I'm not used to that.
I would also talk to other adoptive parents to find out what it's like to adopt. And I think you had a first part to your question. Are you still eligible to adopt in your 50s? Yes, absolutely. Particularly if you're looking at a child who might be a little bit older, not a baby. There are many opportunities. But there are wonderful adoptive parent groups online and in person that you can talk with. And the questions that you have, you can raise with them, or you might not even know what your hesitancy is about, but you might figure it out by talking to other people who have been through it.
So, thank you, Gloria. Before we close, I have a personal question. My parents are no longer living. Is 62 too old to be adopted?
Maybe we can see what we can do
I'm
for you.
I'm just wondering. Yes.
We'll have to reevaluate your case and see.
Now I'm a
like
case.
A good boy.
I want to thank all three of you so much for joining us. Maxine Chalker is founder and president of Adoptions from the Heart. Gloria Hochman is director of communication at the National Adoption Center. Alex, thank you for so much for making this alive and making it available and accessible to all of us. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to excerpts from a recent panel discussion on adoption. It was part of our In the Spirit of Family discussion series presented by WHYY's Children's Service. You can listen to archive editions of Voices in the Family on our website, whyy.org/voices. Special thanks to Susan Polinko and Jennifer Wheeler of WHYY's Children's Service. The engineers for today's show have been Al Banks, John Knapp, and Bob Purdick. I'm Mike and Scott. Thank you for listening.
Day to day is